Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Shuttle Pod at the Disco. This is Shuttle Pod at the Disco episode number 10, and today we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery episode number 11, The Wolf Inside. I'm your host, Kaylee Iacovino, and I am joined by my co-host, Brian Drew.
Hello, everybody.
All right, Brian, let's dive right into this. We watched yesterday. Today is Monday, January 15th, 2018. And yesterday we watched episode 11 of Discovery, The Wolf Inside, written by Lisa Randolph and directed by TJ Scott. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts about this episode? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Did you love it?
I guess I was a little indifferent to it. I really liked last week's episode. You know, we obviously talked about it at length last week. I'm not going to get into it now. I really enjoyed last week's episode. And this one didn't do it for me as much. I felt like there was a lot of exposition. That part of it I didn't like. I did like seeing the stuff on the surface with the Tellarites and the Andorians, seeing those guys. That was cool.
Yeah.
We'll obviously get into this more in a little bit, but obviously the final giant reveal with Vok and Tyler happened. What was hinted at last week and obviously what's been hinted at for months finally truly came out yesterday. So that's obviously the big headline of the episode. We can get into the specifics of it. The headline for me, though, was decent episode, but a bit of a letdown after what I thought last week was, which was a really strong hour. Sure. What did you think?
I would agree with you insofar as last week's episode was my favorite of the season, of the whole series so far. You know, I really liked this episode, and I don't know if I can put my finger on exactly what about it I liked, except for to say that I was really invested in the story. I noticed I always take notes when I'm watching the episodes, because we, you know, talk about the episodes on the podcast and write reviews for the website, and so I'm always taking notes. And I noticed that there were long stretches where I wouldn't take a single note because I didn't have anything that I wanted to say because I was too invested in what was going on screen.
Yeah, so that's always a good sign.
Yeah, so I really actually enjoyed that part of it. I don't think it's perfect. There are definitely like some rough spots. Probably if I went back and watched it with a very critical eye, I could find things that that doesn't quite make sense, or why did they do this here and there. But just from a total viewing and enjoyment perspective, I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd give it high marks with that regard.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously we'll dig into it more as we go. I mean, I spoke in a very generic way.
Sure.
Earlier. We can dig into the nitty gritty of it now.
That's what we're here for.
It's only the two of us, and since it's only the two of us today, we can elaborate a bit.
That's right. If we
want to. All right. So the opening of the show, which opens with Michael Burnham doing a voiceover, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the first time she's done anything like that.
Hasn't she done, like, didn't she do, like, a captain's log, or, like, a first officer's log in the first episode, something like
okay,
that?
Okay, she might have. No, but I thought Michelle Yeoh did that.
Maybe. I swear she's done a first officer's log, but I could be mistaken.
Okay.
I'll have to go back and check.
Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah, but, you know, it was cool to see that. It was cool to, you know, you get to get into her head a little bit and see what she's thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long teaser. It had to be a good 7 or 8 minutes before we get into the credits. Maybe, I mean, I didn't time it, but it was long. It has to be one of the longest pre-credit teases of the Star Trek franchise.
Now, there's a piece of trivia for you. What is the longest, you know, cold open or whatever the parlance is?
Yeah, that's fine too. Cold open teaser, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, what is the longest open before you get to the credits ever on a Star Trek show? And was it this one?
Yeah, I'm sure somebody out there already knows that.
I feel like that's a crazy enough thing that if you know that, like, I feel like saying if you know the answer to this question and can prove it, like, put it in the comments and we'll, like, send you a t-shirt or something, because that's nuts if you actually figure that out. Because I know someone out there knows.
Yeah. Well, if you know it, get back at us, please.
Yeah.
We have no idea what we'll send you, but we'll certainly think of something.
Well, I have a stash full of giveaways. I'll send you something if you want.
Oh, that's true. We've got that little goodie bag.
Yeah.
Collected from many conventions over the years.
Oh, yeah. So, remind me, what... We're talking about the opener being so long. I'm trying to remember all that happened before the credits. Mm. So, it's Burnham doing this very... If I remember correctly, this very poetic voiceover. A lot of her dialogue, especially when it's her sort of narrating, it's very poetic. It's a really interesting style that they have her speaking in.
How so?
Oh, man, I wish I could think of specific examples. But just the... Maybe it's partly the word choice, but partly her delivery as well. Like, it doesn't come across to me as if she's having a normal conversation. It's like she's reading a poem, you know, or reading... Or writing... something to be read back later. Oftentimes the captain's logs are just like, you know, captain's log, stardate X. Today we went to planet Y and saw this species. It will be interesting to learn more about them. Like, but hers is almost like, oh man, I wish I could think of the specific words she uses, but she, you know, the way they write these scenes for her, she's like painting this very rich narrative with the words that she uses.
Right. Anyway, it was good to crawl. You kind of get into her head a little bit. We get to see the Mirror Saru, who is kind of her, I guess, manservant.
I guess so.
There's no other way to describe him. He's in the Mirror Universe. I guess he's a slave.
Yeah, he said a slave has no name.
He has no name. Yeah.
I thought it was weird. She said, "I'm going to call you Saru," like after an old friend. But like, surely this Mirror Saru would have been born with the name Saru. Like, it's not like he was born without a name, right?
Yeah. I thought maybe he would hesitate there and go, "How'd you know my real
name?"
Yeah,
I thought so too.
Yeah.
And I guess that was her covering for it. Oh, I'll name you after a friend of mine. But if I were him, I would have been like, that's a little too specific.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
How many Sarus do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was interesting to see him in that kind of role where he's basically, he warms up her bath for her, bathes her a bit, maybe probably makes her food.
Yeah.
You know, kind of her own kind of yeoman.
Sexy yeoman.
Yeah, I guess so. You know what I mean? Something along those lines.
Yeah. Was it implied in any other Mirror Universe episodes, particularly like in TOS, that there were yeomen that were essentially, I mean, there was the captain's woman, but that's a different thing.
Yeah, Marlena Moreau.
Yeah.
I don't remember Kirk having a yeoman in Mirror Mirror.
Yeah. I could see that fits, though, to me.
It would. Yeah. But no, I don't think he did. I could see the Marlena character would not have tolerated him having another woman around him.
Yeah, that's possibly true.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the captain's woman, we certainly had a captain's man in this episode, which was Tyler.
Yeah, we did. That's right, Ash Tyler.
I thought that was interesting how they worked that in, because she's able to be more open with her relationship, including her sexual relationship with Tyler, on Mirror Discovery than she is on regular Discovery. Because if someone walks in, and by the way, does anyone knock in this universe?
Yeah, it's like, I noticed that too.
How many times did they get walked in on? But it's
Saru walked in there, and then he walked in. I mean, we'll get to that later when he walks in during a climactic moment.
Right. Good thing for that. But
yeah,
I thought it was funny how, you know, whenever someone walks in, it's like, oh yeah, we're just having sex in here, because he's like, he's the captain's man. No big deal. Yeah. No one even bats an eye.
Yeah. You just come right on in. Don't knock.
Yeah. Especially the captain. Like, what if she's doing something private?
What if doesn't the captain have a do not disturb sign on her door, right? Or something? Lock the door. I don't know. In a environment like the Mirror Universe, where everybody's out to get everybody,
they'd have locks.
They would have the most ridiculous security you've ever seen.
Yeah, and it wouldn't depend on like a security officer or some other person. You know,
right?
It could be a lock or something that they don't have to hope won't stab them in the back.
Right. Anyway, I cut you off. What were you saying?
Well, something else I noticed in the beginning, very heavily in the beginning of this episode, but sort of throughout it, that I wanted to point out were specific moments of dialogue that called out to the overall arc of the story or to other little things in the story. And I think it started in the very beginning, when towards the very beginning, when we see Stamets. I believe it's the scene where we see Stamets holding Culber, who's been killed. Mm. And he's mumbling something, and something about the like being in the forest. You know, I can see him through the trees, even though
the forest for the trees kind of.
Yeah, the forest is thick, but I can see him through the trees or something like that. And to me, the forest here, he kept saying forest, was an which was also a callback to the previous episode, Into the Forest I Go. Mm-hmm. Which I think was an obvious allegory for the spores, the spore network, mycelium network. Because mm-hmm. we have this forest, basically, that he's grown on the Discovery. And we know he's connected to the network at this point. So can he see, is he seeing Mirror Culber or another version of Culber somewhere out there in the network? That's what I took away from that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That's totally what he was seeing. I found that section of the show a little weird because you open and...
Oh, yeah, I did too. Yeah, I know what you're...
It's like the Discovery is dark and very mysterious, and it's like, okay, what the hell's going on here? You figure the only true character on this ship right now that's got a really dark soul is Ash Tyler. So I figured, okay, we're clearly... There's some sort of thing related to Ash Tyler that we are going to see right now. And obviously it gets closer, and Stamets is holding on to Culber, who's been killed, and he's obviously reciting this forest and trees thing. And I did think that was kind of an odd interlude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't see the point of it at all, narratively, why they did that.
Really? See, I thought the scene itself was great. I really liked, because I liked being able to see Stamets now has seen what's happened, and to see him sort of grieving over the death of his partner, like that little line I really liked. What didn't make any sense to me was, like you said, they show it and it's all dark, and they show,
yeah,
and it's like the beginning of a movie or something where you're waiting and it's all dark, and then you see this woman say, "Oh, I'm still just working on that, like that electrical problem," and it's like, where are we? Are we in a corridor? But now he's in sick bay, right? So where are we? Why is it dark in this entire corridor? Why is there no one else in this corridor except for this chick and Stamets? Like, right. That part didn't make sense.
And the dead ship's doctor.
Yeah, that part didn't make any sense to me. They should have just done that scene in the sick bay.
Yeah, it was an odd choice. I agree. You have to see some sort of reaction from Stamets, although it's hard to tell whether he understands what's happening or not, but whether he even understands that Culber's dead or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, the way they decided to frame it was a little...
It was odd, bizarre. I think it seems like it was beautiful. Just like it looked great, but it didn't make any sense.
But yeah, it had no narrative. It didn't feel like it had any narrative reason to be there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought that was very strange as well.
Yeah, it was kind of odd. All the mumbling he's doing is obviously a foreshadowing for things that happen later. Do we want to talk about Stamets now?
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so obviously they get him, Tilly and Saru get him back on a med bed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out how to restore his cognitive functions, because apparently most of his brain has shut down.
Because it's redirecting all its energy to
like the frontal
lobe,
right?
Some other thing, yeah.
Yeah. So they're trying to figure out how to get his entire brain working again. It was an interesting storyline in the sense that, you know, obviously there's a lot of technobabble in it. Some of the stuff that they were talking about was like some of the most intense technobabble in the history of the Star Trek franchise. It was insane. I was like, what?
I want to high five Mary Wiseman for getting through all that, because that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was good. All I could think of was like guys like Ron Moore and Brandon Braga sitting at home watching it going, holy shit. Because it was a lot, because those guys were known for writing technobabble. And that was a doozy last night. I'm sorry.
I liked that they didn't hold your hand through the technobabble, though, as thick as it was. I thought it was done well, because I think it's hard to balance technobabble that makes sense. You know, it's not just completely gibberish. It makes sense, but it's written in like a scientific style. But also, then they say it in plain language when they need to make sure the rest of the audience knows what the heck they just said. Like, oh, look, these functions are returning to baseline. It's working. You know what I mean? Things like that. Like, they throw in the little, it's working, to make sure. And I thought that they didn't hit you over the head with the, well, in English, please, or what does that mean?
Right.
Yeah, so that was nice.
But the cool thing that happens here, and this is one of the things about the episode I did like, even though it kind of comes out of nowhere, but I like that Stamets' salvation is tied to Tilly, mm-hmm. and Tilly having to kind of figure things out and kind of take charge.
Mm-hmm.
I did find the change in her personality a little rapid.
Sure, I agree.
I mean, she was like a couple episodes ago was practically, you know, stuttering when she spoke to people, and now she's like become this assertive person. That happened a little unnaturally fast. But it was interesting to tie his distress and potential salvation to someone young and basically, you know, inexperienced as she is. And watch her try to get through it, and, you know, and the effort she makes to try to save him and the setbacks that she has and stuff like that. So I like that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I think the character is, I've always really liked the character of Tilly, but I think it's cool what they're doing with her. And she's not just comic relief. They're giving her real things to do.
Yeah, they couldn't keep her like that forever.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she turns into like a Reg Barkley type, which is kind of like, okay, Reg, that's great. We've seen you for 10 minutes, now go away.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so anyway, they go through this process. Stamets, they inject all those extra spores into the chamber, right? And then his heart stops and they think he's dead. Now that's the part where I'm like, okay, did we really have to go through the trouble of pretending he's dead?
Yeah, I knew he wasn't dead.
Yeah, we all know he wasn't dead. I mean, come on.
No, they're not going to kill him like that. That'd be stupid.
Yeah, so it was kind of sad. And then you have to watch Tilly get all upset and start crying. And it's like, oh, come on. We know this is bullshit. But then, you know, he obviously wakes up and then he has that dream or vision or whatever he's in the network, maybe somewhere in the network, you know, which is a giant internet of, you know, spores for the internet spores or something. Where they all can kind of meet up and like have an instant message thing or something.
The spore chat room.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it felt like, you know, because then Mira Stamets is in there in his full outfit and he's like, Paul, I've been, you know, what did he say? Paul, I've been waiting for you. What took you so long?
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, what took you so long? Something along those lines. Yeah, which I thought that was awesome because I was so engrossed in the other stuff that was going on that I sort of didn't even think to expect. I mean, it seems obvious like he's gonna meet Mira Stamets. It's not like oh my god, that's a shock. But I was like, oh wow, that kind of came out of left field. I like it
because
I was distracted by all these other things.
And that was the only part of the episode that I got a little bit of surprise out of. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. I was not expecting that. Yeah, that was really cool. Because we'll get to the other things later, but that were not a surprise. But that one genuinely was.
Yeah.
You know, that was like, okay, we'll see where we'll go with that. Maybe Mira Stamets is going to help him, you know, come out of his Gary Mitchell state or, you know.
But is Mira Stamets evil? Are we scared for him now that he's met Mira Stamets? Who seems to be in better aware of what's going on?
Yeah, he did. He did seem kind of like an affable fellow, though, didn't he?
Yeah, it's hard. He hard to tell.
I don't know. He wasn't like, "What took you so long?" You know, he wasn't like pithy or like, you know, nasty.
No, he wasn't. You know, but he could be being manipulative. You know, we don't know.
That's true. So we'll find out. But overall, I liked the Stamets part of the show. I thought it worked fairly well.
Me too.
The only thing I thought was odd, and this isn't so much about Stamets as so much as it's about things related to Stamets. Apparently Saru and Tilly and everybody else thinks somehow maybe that Stamets killed Culber.
Yeah.
I was like, don't they have security monitors on the Discovery?
But that's been a problem with every series of Star Trek ever. That they don't.
I know, but this one's got more tech than most other. You know what I mean? Like, I assume that they would have some sense of, like, what happened.
I mean,
maybe you're right. Maybe
I agree with you, but at the same time, literally every other Star Trek has had this same issue.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
Or, like, how about, you know, how many times, especially in TNG, has someone gone, where is so-and-so? Computer, locate so-and-so. So-and-so is not aboard the Enterprise. You're one of your main crewmen just like left the ship while you're at warp or something and they like didn't think to notify you. You know, there's always those kind of things. So I don't know. I guess I can let it slide on that basis.
Yeah, I guess you have to let it. It just felt like that was another instance though where like everybody knows that what the real truth was and like it just felt like one of those odd things where it's like I don't know.
I could see if you assume there's really no security cameras or no record of what had gone on.
No record. Yeah. Then you have to assume he did it.
Yeah. I could see how they would come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
It's nice that even so that Tilly was defending him, saying that Stamets didn't do it. That man is not Paul Stamets right now in the state that he's in.
Right.
So I actually have some other of these moments of dialogue that might be able to actually jump us off to talking about the different.
Okay, let's hear it.
The different things. So if we want to talk about, why don't we talk about sort of the A storyline, which is, you know, Burnham's mission to the surface, along with the Tyler arc.
Right.
And there's a line that I thought was really interesting. Well, there's two, really. There's two lines, and one of them has a callback. And they're both in that first scene where Burnham and Tyler are having sexy times in her bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler says to Burnham, you know, you're my tether. And there's a callback to that later where Burnham says, you know, I thought I was your tether. I need one too. And I thought that was interesting because as we've talked about, I think we talked about this last week, that the relationship between Michael Burnham and Tyler is this thing that has prevented his programming from fully working because he has some tie to this human side of him, this person who is Ash Tyler, even though he's sort of two people in one head. So I thought that was an interesting bit of dialogue. But also I loved that when they're sitting there talking to each other, and I can't remember what actually prompted her to say this, but Burnham says to Tyler in that scene, "We're all human here." And I thought that was interesting because obviously we knew we were about to learn that that's not true.
Right. I do have a question before we like get down to the planet's surface. Mm-hmm. I do have a question. This was something I was genuinely confused about kind of when I was watching the episode. When she goes to speak to Lorca before she beams down and he tells her, you know, you got to go, you got to do this, you got to do that, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Her rationale for going down was she figured that if they could negotiate a peace with the Mirror Universe Klingons, that they would somehow be able to do the same in our universe. Did you understand it that way?
Yes, I think that was... I have two comments. I think that, A, that was a secondary benefit to her going. I think her primary reason for going was because she didn't want to just blow up this planet with all these people on it. And she's struggling morally with having to do that. And also, because on the one hand, like Lorca even says to her, you know, you got to do it. You got to blow them up because you think of everyone back on Discovery, you know, in our universe that you need to save. And she's like, okay, but I'm not just going to blow up all these people to save them. That I'm still Starfleet. You know, I can't do that. So I think that was number one. And I think number two is, yeah, exactly what you just said. And at first I was like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, especially after learning that, what did they call him? The lone wolf, a fire wolf or something?
Yeah, something
a fire wolf is the leader, is Vok. And then there's Vok in our universe. The idea that, you know, there's a Vok here in the mirror universe that's amenable to having a conversation with. Because even though he's a mirror side of the other Vok, there's probably some seed of him inside there that's, you know, similar, that he would react in a similar way to one thing or the other. I don't know. I could see an argument for that being made, that if I can talk to this Vok, maybe I'll have some kind of insight into the other Vok that's not available in our universe.
I guess I felt like it was a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I think it is too. But like I said, I think it's the secondary reason. I was more on board with the primary reason for her going down, which was I'm not just going to kill all these people.
Right.
To save face.
Right. No, I agree. But when I heard that part, I literally listened to it three times. I'm like, did she say what I thought she said? Like, I really like it because it really didn't make any sense to me. But the way you framing it that way kind of gives it a little more.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is in that moment, I think she kind of threw it in there to be like, oh, and like bonus, maybe we can get some insight from this. Mm. You know, the more you think about it, the more you're like, actually, probably not. He probably has nothing in common with our Vok. But whatever. I could see why she would propose that in that moment, I guess.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. I was just, like I said, I wanted to get that out there because it did genuinely confuse me.
No, it's a good point because it was a little bit like, what?
All right, so we get down to the surface, which looked like it was somewhere in Southern California. Proud Star Trek tradition.
Southern California, but with a blue filter on it.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't Southern California because they shoot in Toronto, but, you know, I always get a kick out of whenever I look at, like, a desert terrain in a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, L.A.
It really did look like SoCal, though. You got to, because what nearby Toronto would look like that?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to find out where they shot, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a cool-looking area. It looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
They poured a bunch of filters on top of it, and they gave it a slightly different look. So, look, it was fun.
Yeah.
So they end up going into this camp, which is hidden
mm-hmm.
by force fields, I guess, or some cloaking technology.
Yeah, what did she call it? Active camouflage?
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's a cloak, obviously.
Yeah.
Kind of like you would do with a duck blind.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the duck blind.
That kind of a thing. Yeah. Yeah. So they go into this camp where Vok is, where Mira Sarek is.
Yes, Mira Sarek was awesome with the goatee. Come on.
Yep.
That was fantastic.
It's apparently a prerequisite for Vulcans in the Mirror Universe.
They all have to have goatees.
They got to rock the facial hair.
Yeah. He looked good in it, I got to say.
He did. Vulcans can pull off the goatee really well.
Yeah.
You know? Because Spock looked badass with a goatee.
Yeah, he did. I thought that was a fantastic touch.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice little bit. So what ends up happening, she has to try to convince them that she's not the you know, horrible person that they apparently know of.
Uh-huh.
So she has this mind meld with Sarek. Sarek immediately realizes that she's from another universe and that they have a connection of sorts. But he doesn't really, he advocates for her after that, but he doesn't really try to form a connection with her after that. That may come
mm-hmm.
down the line. But he kind of tells everybody that she's, you know, she's not who you think she is, blah, 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 blah. That was a cool little moment.
Yeah.
That worked. That totally worked.
I like what he said about, you know, he's like, I see a place where, or a world or something, where there's an unusual amount of, you know, human kindness. It wasn't that. It was much better said than that, but. Something along those lines, just like basically saying, hey, I'm seeing this existence where humans are kind and they're not these terrible,
yes.
you know, conquerors.
Right.
There's a great capacity for, yeah.
Did he say great capacity? Did he say for compassion?
For compassion. Yeah, I think compassion. Yes. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really nice. Obviously, I was not able to reproduce that as well as the writers did in the first place. So, good job. That's why you pay the writers the big bucks.
Right. So, anyway, they're in this camp, in this little conference area with, obviously, the Mirror Universe Vok.
Mm-hmm.
As well as an Andorian and a Tellarite.
Mm-hmm.
Both making their Discovery debuts. And the Andorian, I mean, they might have made a couple of subtle cosmetic changes here and there, but the Andorian largely looked like the Andorians looked on Enterprise.
Uh-huh.
And to some degree, obviously, from the original series. So, I don't know, I think they nailed the Andorian pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was happy with it.
Yeah. And the Tellarite, definitely, obviously, they've changed the Tellarite a bit. They're very, you know, in the original show, they were very pig-like looking creatures.
Yeah.
With a nasty disposition. I think that they still have that. But they definitely added some more flourishes. And they also appeared, I believe, on Enterprise once or twice. And the makeup there was kind of so-so. So they kind of took the original look, I think, from the original series and kind of just added some more detail to the, you know, with the hair and, like, just general more detail to the face and whatnot. And I thought it looked pretty cool. I mean, he was clearly a Tellarite.
Right. Yeah, I thought they looked great.
Yeah, yeah. I thought they both looked really good. I definitely like that.
I love that. And whether this was planned from the beginning or not, probably not. But I love that they chose those races, because then they do this callback to the scene in, I guess, episode one or two, where T'Kuvma is saying, you know, the humans, don't listen to them. They want us to fraternize with these dirty Andorians and these lowly Tellarites. and Vulcans. He lists all the races that are sitting at this table in the Mirror Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. Good call. So they're there. They're kind of acting more as like, I don't know, what would you call their function? They're mostly just there to be like Vox guys, right?
Yeah, like his, like they're like the main dudes, so that he seeks their counsel probably whenever he makes big decisions about stuff.
Right. So anyway, Burnham starts to negotiate with Vok, and I think Vok says a few words either in Klingon or he says Kalis. I think doesn't he say Kalis's name at one
point? Because everything's great. Everything's gone swimmingly. And then they're about to leave, and Michael Burnham says, "Wait, I need something in return." He's like, "All right, what do you want?" And she says, "I want you to like tell me how you got all these people together," and blah, blah, blah. And then he said something about the light of Kalis guides us or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was like one of the trigger words.
Right.
For Tyler, as we had seen when Laurel tried to activate him.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, Tyler completely loses his mind. And he attacks Vok. And they get into this fairly brief battle. It didn't go on for very long.
Yeah, Tyler got owned.
Yeah, very quickly. And then they kind of just, everything breaks up. And they continue to negotiate. Like, hey, that was no big deal. Let's get back to what we were saying. Where were we?
Right.
And like, they kind of conclude their discussion and they return to the Shenzhou. I thought that was a little weird, like how they kind of just, the fight was almost like just this brief interlude. She kind of tried to hand wave it by being like, yeah, he's like, what'd she call him? Like something like my guard or something stepped out of line, or I forget how she phrased it.
Yeah, she said he's not acting under my orders, or he's not acting under my wishes.
Yeah, something along those lines. Yeah, then that's how she tried to kind of get away with it. And then they kind of just proceeded like nothing happened. So,
yeah.
I thought that was a little weird, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then they went back to the ship, and then things got really weird after that.
And also, now that I think about it, when Tyler Vok was activated, why did he try to kill Mirror Vok? Was he just out of his, he was just out of his mind, so he was just going to kill anyone?
That's a good question.
Like, why wouldn't he try to kill Burnham, or why would he try to kill anyone?
True.
Shouldn't they have planned like I'm sure that when they planned this thing, Laurel wasn't like, great, I'm gonna activate you and then you murder me. So it's not like he's supposed to murder whoever activates him.
Yeah.
The plan must have been, I'm gonna activate you and then you'll remember who you are, and then him going crazy in a killing spree could not have been part of the plan.
Right.
Maybe he's just so messed up by his tether to Burnham that all his programming is out of whack. But you know, it just seems odd in retrospect.
Yeah, good point. I hadn't even thought of
that. I didn't until just now.
Interesting.
It would be nice if they would address that later.
Yeah, it would, actually. That's a really good point. Anyway, so they go back to the Shenzhou, and then, Kelly, do you want to take it from there?
Sure. So they go back to the Shenzhou, and let's see, Tyler and Burnham have this conversation. Burnham's basically saying, all right, I know that something's been up with you for a while, when you had that freak out on the ship, when you couldn't even go through with a very simple mission on the worker bee, and now this is like a whole new level. What's going on? I know there's something wrong with you. And he's like, no, please, no, there's nothing wrong. And of course, he comes out and says, actually, I remember everything now. And this is the big, this is, like you said, the headline of the episode, where it turns out Tyler is Klingon Vok, aka White Chocolate Klingon. And I think he explains explicitly here that his body, he's Vok physically, and his body was altered to be in the shape of Tyler. And then Tyler's memories or something, I guess, were implanted with him so that he could pretend to be who. And he said, I sacrificed my being Klingon for my people. And so that's the big reveal. I think, like you've already alluded to, it was not really a shock to most people. No. Especially with the whole Tyler is Vok theory having been around on the internet for months now.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess CBS could have worked a little bit harder to try and keep that a secret, but
yeah,
it's still cool. You know, I wonder if the episode was less exciting for some because two of the huge reveals in this episode, one of which was Tyler and Vok, one of which we'll talk about later, were people had pretty much guessed them.
Yes, they were pretty easy to.
Yeah, and so
it was very easy to connect the dots.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're paying a little bit more attention than the average casual viewer, you know, it's pretty easy to see it. So I wonder if that made the episode a little bit less, you know, climactic for some people.
Yeah, for people like me and you, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I still liked it though. I was still excited that he finally gave the reveal because I'm like, great, now finally everybody else in the show is going to be caught up. At least, you know, Michael knows now. And also, he said to her, I'm glad this happened. He said, I killed Culber. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good, because I was worried that they were going to drag this thing out with everyone thinking Stamets killed Culber. Because do you think that, you know, maybe they're going to tell him, I hope not, on regular Discovery, they might tell him, like, you killed Culber, which would be kind of messed up. And I hope they don't. I hope they don't go that route. Because they could write a storyline where they decide to tell Stamets that he killed his partner and then grieves over it and then finds out actually it wasn't him, but he's gone through all that trauma now. That would be pretty messed up.
Yeah, I hope they don't do that too. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they don't do that.
I hope not. They left it open if they wanted to do it, but I just hope they don't because that's...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of gross.
Yeah.
So Shahzad Latif is amazing in this sequence.
Oh my gosh, she's been incredible in these last two episodes, just over the top really incredible. Is.
Yeah, he... There's so many subtle shades to the way he plays both those characters in various different states. Like, it's a really impressive bit of acting. He's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying him as an actor right now. Really, really good.
Me too. And here's another point coming off of that. I have a feeling everyone really likes him and that he's really great on the show. So it seems that the writers would want to keep him around.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's true, how might they do that? You know, there are a couple ways they could go. Because now that we know that Tyler is Vok and he's basically transformed back into Vok at this point, we can start wondering what might come next. So, you know, Vok, for example, Vok killed Culber, but as Vok. So the Tyler part of him is innocent. So how do you deal with that, you know? And and will they come up with some techno-y way to separate the two?
I don't know. That surgery that they were showing flashes of looked horrifically invasive.
Yeah.
Culber says, you are not Ash Tyler anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And he even said that there's like scar tissue around every one of your organs. And they did bone crushing to make him a different height and all this stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, it's a good question. Like, just who is that being and who's responsible for what? And is there an Ash Tyler?
Right.
That's another question.
I think there has to be. I think there has to be because he was in all the Starfleet databases and everything. And I can't imagine that they had enough wherewithal to not only do this whole surgery thing, but also somehow like hack all of Starfleet's systems and make up this fake person.
Right.
So I think he's a real person. So the question is he alive? Is he still being held captive somewhere on a Klingon ship, on Laurel's ship or something like that? Maybe somehow the real Tyler is alive and maybe he's actually linked to the events that have been going on with Tyler Vok. You know, maybe somehow maybe they implanted his memory / consciousness on top of Vok, but that only works if it's like somehow linked with the actual mind and brain of a real Ash Tyler. So maybe those memories are being also stored in the real Ash Tyler.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever they did, though, is clearly like, like just horrific. They destroyed a being, essentially, in order to...
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, completely. And they created a new one.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's an interesting ethical questions to be asked there. And then just from a TV show standpoint, are they going to make this kind of hybrid character ultimately a regular on the show?
Right.
Or is this being going to die before the end of the season? I mean, we obviously don't know any of that. For them to keep him around would be interesting. Certainly a challenge in terms of figuring out, obviously, the ethical questions.
I think it would be such a shame to see Shahzad Latif leave because, like you said, he's been so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love him to stay. Well, we've got a few more shows. What do we got? Four left?
So yeah.
We'll see what comes of it. I think I'm guessing there's still two more Mirror episodes after this one. So it doesn't look like next week they're going to resolve the arc. It looks like they're actually going to get into it deeper. So I tend to think we're going to be here for a couple more episodes. So maybe they'll resolve everything by the end of it. And it could still go back to also what I speculated on last week, which is that Vok will see what life is like on the other side.
Right.
And realize that the humans are not as bad as they all think they were, and go back and be sort of an emissary.
That's still what I hope, because that would be so Star Trek.
It would. It would. So maybe that'll happen too. So there's a lot of ways, and obviously otherwise also the character could just die horribly. So who the hell knows? There's a lot of ways. There's a lot of ways it could go. Yeah. So
my money, if I had to place bets right now, my money is on what you just said, is that Vok becomes the unlikely liaison, arguing that the humans aren't so bad after all.
Yeah. We'll see.
The unlikely hero.
And I know there's been speculation online today that this creature is like the example of like what you know, the human-looking Klingons looked like during the original series, and that he's like one of the first ones. I don't think that's anything.
Wait, that would go, what?
I saw that a couple of times today. People speculating, he's clearly like the first example of like a human-looking Klingon from TOS. I'm like, no.
What about the augment virus?
Well, that's the other part, the augment virus.
Like, that's canon, though.
That's Like I said, I saw it a couple
times. How bizarre. I mean, is this like people who have never watched Enterprise? Like,
could be. And I saw somebody else speculating, oh, this is just like Arn Darvin. I'm like, nah, this isn't like Arn Darvin.
Yeah, but here's the
Trouble of Tribbles.
They have to, the nitpicky Trekkie in me is going to be very upset if they don't address this. Because there's a big disconnect right now, given what we know now about Vok being able to infiltrate Discovery and Arn Darvin from The Trouble with Tribbles, who, just to remind people who maybe don't remember, is the Klingon who looks like a human. And they figure out he's a Klingon because a Tribble reacts to his presence. And then when Bones scans him with a tricorder, he goes, oh, yeah, he's a Klingon. He immediately can tell. Yet 10 years prior, here on the Discovery, Vok, who looks just like Ash Tyler and talks like Ash Tyler, they put him on a med bed and he gets scanned. And he looks like a human. All of his, he doesn't have any redundant organs or anything like that Klingons have. And to be fair, they did do this surgery, but it's not like they could, if they replaced every one of his organs with human organs, then he's not really Vok anymore, is he? You know what I mean?
No, it's just his consciousness.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I guess you could make some argument that because the physical, that like in the Arn Darvin was just kind of like some kind of very surficial cosmetic thing rather than his internal organs maybe were still all Klingon and so they could tell, something like that. But otherwise, there's a big disconnect between Vok's ability to infiltrate the Discovery and Arn Darvin being discovered with a single tricorder scan.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Very good point. Yeah. Very good point. Although, obviously, some of it has to do with the way Klingons looked during the original series and the way they look in Discovery and the way they look later on, in TNG and the movies.
True. Yeah,
it was more plausible, obviously, in The Trouble with Tribbles because the Klingons looked
human. Just like... With bushy eyebrows.
Yeah, lots of facial hair and stuff like that, so... it was easy to accept the plausibility that one of them could be slightly surgically altered to look human. Yeah.
Oh, and so. Speaking of facial hair, this is sort of a random aside, but on Reddit the other day, I saw somebody said, hey, just for fun, I did a quick Photoshop of what the Discovery Klingons would look like with hair, and they just Photoshopped like Worf's hair with a ponytail and like facial hair onto T'Kuvma, and I thought it looked great.
I'll have to look.
Yeah, it's really good.
Cool. Oh, speaking of, before we, since we're talking about the Klingons really quick, I thought that the makeup job on Vok was really good in this. I feel like they've been adjusting the makeup for the Klingons as they've been going. Because we all experienced what the difficulty the actors were having early on.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's been addressed somewhat, at least. I feel like yesterday watching him speak in, with the, you know, obviously he was speaking English, which might have helped also. Yeah. But like it didn't look like he had a hard time bending his lips, basically making his lips move. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It felt more natural.
It'd be interesting to go back and watch side by side from like episode
eventually we'll have to do that. But it did feel, and like I said, maybe it has something to do with the fact that he was speaking English and he wasn't trying to speak through the makeup and try to speak a fake language at the same time. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know. So we'll have to check that out. But it definitely felt more organic and natural last night, at least to me.
Nice.
So anyway, getting back to the whole Tyler Vok business. So they end up getting into this confrontation. It gets physical. And it looks like Vok's about to really, like, do some serious damage to Burnham when, very conveniently, Mira Saru shows up with a couple of dudes.
Dun, ta-da.
Yeah, here we come to save the day. And they subdue him and cart him away.
I really liked what the writers did with this, having him attack her and being found out, because now she's put in the dilemma, I don't know if it's a dilemma, it was for me as a viewer, of having to kill Tyler Vok. Because, and I think even, is it Kayla? I hate that that's her name, because that's my name. Anyways, Kayla says to Burnham, you know, we got to kill him. The law is very clear on this, that he, you know, mutinied against you, tried to kill you. And so now we got to put him to death by beaming him out into space. And I thought that was really well done. And we had already seen that that's how they kill people. So it all made a lot of sense. And then it also allowed the MacGuffin, which is that Burnham has to get some data files. She can't decrypt them and send the information to the Discovery without being discovered. And so she has to find some way to get the data to Discovery. And she kills two birds with one stone. And before Tyler is beamed to an icy death in space, she like punches him in the gut. At the same time, presumably put some kind of homing beacon or something on him. So when he's beamed out into space, Discovery immediately catches that signal and beams him on the Discovery along with the data file, data tape thing that she put in him, in his like belt or something. And I have to note a nice callback, I think, to the TOS data tapes, which were those just plastic squares. This one was just a clear acrylic plastic square. So I thought that was neat.
Mm. Yeah, that was a fun little thing. I thought that whole bit was a little convenient, though, with putting the homing beacon on him and beaming him off the ship. And he was in the vacuum of space for a fair amount of time. And then I thought that was all a little too cute. But
yeah, I liked it. It was just cute enough for me.
All right, fair enough. So anyway, he's now in the brig on board the Discovery. Mm-hmm. Burnham is still on the Shenzhou, and while she's there trying to gather her wits after what had just happened, we find out that there's an incoming transmission from the
I don't even know if there's a transmission.
A giant ship arrives,
and then starts pummeling the surface.
Right. They carpet bomb the surface with multiple torpedoes.
Which, by the way, can we get some of those torpedoes in our universe? Because they were pretty powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never seen photon torpedoes like that before.
They, like, glassed the surface.
Yeah. So, that all happens. Burnham's looking on in horror. And then a transmission comes in, I believe.
Mm-hmm. From Who shall it be?
Who do we think the emperor of the known universe of the Terran Empire was going to be?
Who could it possibly be that would resonate with the audience, resonate with the characters on screen? No one but Captain or Emperor Georgiou.
Right. Michelle Yeoh makes her return to to Star Trek Discovery.
And this was the ending that was supposed to be having us like, crap our pants with excitement. And
it's completely set up to be this holy shit moment.
Yeah, and I'm slightly annoyed because I'm glad it was her. I was you know, predicting it was going to be her, sort of hoping it was going to be her, and I like that. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of annoyed that people, I had read a couple of tweets before starting the episode of people being like, oh my God, you guys, this episode, wait till you get to the huge, amazing, incredible ending. You are not going to believe it. And I was like, wow, what are they going to do? And then they're like, it's Georgiou. And I'm like, oh. Well, I knew, you know, so I felt like because I had read those tweets of people like playing it up that I was like let down, and I wish I hadn't been because I think I would have enjoyed it more.
But we called it like as it was airing last week. As soon as they mentioned it, we were all like in our little internal feed going, oh, it's Georgiou. Like even before the episode ended last week, we were like, oh, it's totally her. It has to be her. Otherwise, it makes no sense. It makes unless it's going to be like. I don't know. It would have to be some like deep cut character from Enterprise or TOS have any resonance. It would have been lame, but it had to be her.
And in I can't remember which convention it was, but there was a convention after her character. It was like right after we saw her character die in the first episodes 1 and 2. Then all the other people were on stage at the convention and she like ran up and joined them and said something about like, this isn't the last you'll see of her.
Oh, okay.
And then we later did see her in the last will and testament, but I was like, that can't be what she was referring to. Cause that was just a tiny little blip. I'm like, so she's definitely going to be coming back somehow. And when you're in the mirror universe, you can bring lots of people back from the dead.
Right. And we all knew a while back that they were going to go to the mirror universe. So we speculated that that would be what happened. So it's good to have her back.
Yeah. She's awesome. So glad she's back. I wonder how much we'll get to interact with her. Hopefully a lot in the next episode.
Well, the next episode, she looks like she's playing a fairly prominent role. So we'll definitely see her a bit of her. So yeah, it's good to have her back. Yeah, we've been pretty good predicting things that are going to happen to Georgiou.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when we saw the first couple of trailers and we were so into it, analyzing them and everything. And all of us were like, oh, she's dead, Captain Walking.
She's dead. Yeah. And I remember we were in Vegas and Kayla was up in a panel with Gates McFadden, actually. Yeah. And she said... They had a discussion about Discovery, and Kayla said, and you know, obviously Georgiou is a dead captain walking, and half the audience like gasped for air.
Yeah,
like oh, what?
What? Really? She?
And yeah, it's like, come on, guys, really? You couldn't read the tea leaves there? Yeah,
I know.
Obviously.
I thought everyone was going to be like laugh at that moment.
Yeah, that's what I thought so too, and everybody was surprised. I was like, oh, I guess we really do pay extra attention to this stuff.
Yeah, we got to remember that. It's like, sorry, yeah, spoilers, I guess.
Right. That's one of those moments where you realize you got to be like, okay, yeah, we obsess over this stuff more than the average bear.
Yeah, it's true.
So. But that was a funny moment, though.
Yeah, it was. We're like, duh, she's going to die. Like, she has to.
Yeah, she has to. In order for Burnham to go on her journey, she had to. Yeah. But it'll be cool to see how she relates to Emperor Georgiou. Although, this Georgiou looks like a nasty human being.
Yeah, she does.
So it'll be interesting to see how Burnham deals with that and if Burnham ultimately has to, you know, put her down. Who knows?
Oh, God, that would be terrible. I hope she doesn't because she's already had to kill so many other people that, like, she had to kill Ensign Connor on the turbo lift. And now she's having this thing with Tyler Vok. And, geez, to make her have to kill Georgiou? Like, come on. She's been through enough.
Things are a little rough in this mirror universe.
Yeah, especially for Burnham, it seems, in terms of just, like, you know, oh my God, who do I have to kill next that I love?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Anyway, so that's where we are at the end of the episode. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I think that's, I think we pretty much hit everything that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I am curious, and we have to wait for the entire arc to play itself out, and they get back to either Prime Universe or they land somewhere else. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? But I am curious to see how this mirror arc ties into the larger arc of the entire show, which is the War with the Klingon Empire.
Right.
Because right now, I feel like we completely ditch that.
I mean, that's why I think is another reason why I think it has to come back around to this Vok being the link, the unlikely hero being the link between humans and Klingons, and that's how they come to some sort of ceasefire. Because I mean, they made it seem like we're not going to be dealing with a Klingon war forever. Because we were talking about this a lot before the show ever aired.
Yes, we
You know,
were.
and I remember you saying quite a bit, and I agreed with you saying, gosh, I don't want to be just stuck watching a Klingon war story forever. And I felt like we got indications that we wouldn't be. So I was thinking that season one is going to be Klingon war, and then season two will be something else. So that's why all my money right now is on that theory.
I'm just curious to see how it's all if it's all gonna tie together.
Yeah.
We shall see. We'll see if I'm a genius or not.
I
A soothsayer.
think you might be. Well, we will find out at least a piece of the answer to that question next week when we get to watch Star Trek Discovery episode number 12, which is called Vaulting Ambition. And of course, we will be back here the day after to talk all about it and give you our thoughts and maybe some more predictions. All right, guys. Well, that just about does it for us. We will see you here next week on the Shuttle Pod.
Bye,
Bye.
everybody.
Thank you.